At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on, guys and girls? It's Knife Talk, podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, makers, sculptors, woodworkers, metalworkers. It don't matter.
Cypriots. Anybody.
Cypress in the morning, maybe not for you, but that's fine. I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, and our third person, our main man, Mareko Momasi, is not here this week. He is in Hawaii making beautiful knives with Neil Kamimura, and he's making it happen, and we're going to cover for him. Craig, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, it's been a really, really busy week, and it's getting to a busier weekend. I get on a flight tomorrow back to the UK for a few days, so really, really busy. So I mean, I know we've got lots to get on with in the show today. So shall we just crack on?
Just to let you know, I'm in an awesome mood. I was in a terrible mood.
Why is that?
I have to tell you.
Okay.
Because you can relate. It's in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden I hear a noise.
Right? You don't have a screaming 10-month-old baby in bed with you, surely?
No, just a little noise.
Okay.
And then I hear, what's that? And then my wife is like up, and she goes, what is that? And then I hear,
oh,
dad, come downstairs. What's up? I think we have a mouse. And my wife is mortified. My wife is mortified.
Yeah.
The dogs wake up. My daughter's up. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Both dogs are like, what's going on? You know, they look like, why is everybody out? What's going on? Everybody's up. And then there's another noise. The sound of our cat snoring. Fucking snoring. Like, where the goddamn hell is the cat? The cat's under the bed. Like, it's...
This thing is bred to kill mice and is taking a nap.
First Hillary says, Hillary goes, where's Jerry? I'm like, I don't know where's Jerry. And, you know, so blah, 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 blah. It's like, we're all up now. The fucking cat is like nowhere to be found. And then I had to, and then everyone just, all right. So we problem solved the situation, took care of some issues. I was in a lousy mood. I felt like, because my kid's yelling for me to help. You know, sad. You know, she wants me to help. I'm just like, what am I going to do? Cat's on the floor. When the dog, and the mice are on the floorboard. What am I going to? So we took care of it, right? I'm in a terrible mood. And today, I figured out two systems in place for the new set of knives that I'm like, and these are the most minor details of the construction of these new knives. And I'm so goddamn happy about just the idea of figuring out a way to make a system in place that's going to make production easier. I'm like on cloud nine. I've never been this happy about something as stupid as a couple rubber bands.
I was going to say, does this involve the rubber bands that I saw online?
Well, here's the thing. So one of the things we talk about on Knife Talk is during construction, you just don't want to have to like wrestle things. Mm. Like don't the lead guy at a metal shop used to say to me, "Don't fight the clamps. Don't like if something's hot and you're putting in a jig and you don't have the clamps aren't right." He would say, "Don't fight the clamps." Yeah. So I've been for my rest of my life, I've been saying, "Don't fight the clamps." When you're gluing things up and you're trying to wrestle the clamps, it's the worst. And I was trying to figure out the best way that I could glue these hidden tang, these, I'm calling them hidden tang, I'm calling them framed tang knives.
Oh, okay.
I'm making these frame. And I'm trying to figure out a goddamn, I got these pipe clamps and I got wood and I'm making spacers and I'm making all this bullshit. I got clamps all over the place. I'm like, I got to buy another 20 clamps. I figured out that if I just keep my dowels long in the glue up, dowels aren't connected to the tang at all.
Mm.
I can use it as they're long with the rubber bands and it holds everything down and I only need one clamp. And I was like, I'm telling you, dude, I've changed the whole course of my day.
Hmm.
Whole course.
So they're like they're using them as like an step. Anchor to put right, okay. Yeah.
So the pins are hanging out low, and they're like someone said, well, if you're using pins, well, what do you need to I've been trying my best to use Corby bolts in order to kind of secure everything so I wouldn't need clamps. Like Tomer Botner doesn't need clamps when he puts on his handles because that nut, that cap on the end is threaded, and then that threaded, you know, you tighten it down
pulls
it holds everything together. And same thing, Mareko, same thing. You know, guys who are using, you know, like a pommel cap or something like that's holding everything down. Well, I'm not doing that. And I'm not going all the way through. So, I mean, it's like that easy. And this whole thing's changed the course of the way I feel about it. And it's like, I found some rubber bands. I was walking the dogs. Wherever the postal guy, you know, delivers his, you know, postal, there's a pile of rubber bands on the ground. I just grabbed them off the ground. I don't try it with these. Hmm. And I used it today and I was just like, I'm in great mood.
Good.
Positivity from me today,
yeah.
Craig Lockhart.
So the black handles with the it red, orange, and what are the colors that you use in this year?
All right, so all these different things I've been, you know, playing with for years, and I did one set of Color Lab handles. It was a black handled knife with this set of stripes, and then I threw in some like green, you know, green dowels, and it gave me this kind of whole thing of like this cosmic situation. Like sometimes, like I know
you
don't want to
talk
about it.
Yeah.
Well, kind of like Dark Side of the Moon, but I mean, you can like with the colors and stuff, like you can kind of create a vibe. And to me, it was very much there. I've been like fucking around with the cosmos for a long time in terms of.
Around with the cosmos.
There's your fucking. That is the most obnoxious thing I think I've ever said in my entire life.
Oh,
I've been
fucking
around with the cosmos.
The most podcast thing I've ever heard in my life.
What is this, a fucking Joe Rogan experience? For Christ's sakes. I'm fucking around with the cosmos.
Psilocybin you've been on, that's what it is.
That is the t-shirt of t-shirts, P.S. I've been fucking around with the cosmos, and here's what I found. But you can kind of create this weird vibe, and when you're using black and you have all these colors, especially with stripes, there's this kind of like, you know, comedy thing going, and the Rings of Saturn and all that.
Mm.
So Tony and I made a pile of these different colors and stuff like that, and I was fooling around with some bright stuff. And I said this year it'd be nice to kind of like drop back and have something simple. So we came up with this thing, and Tony and I really liked it. Came up with a name for this color lab. It's called Cosmic Drift.
Nice.
And I'm fucking awesome. I'm so pumped. And it's the departure is so fun because it's not like I'm just doing different color, doing the 8-inch K-tips or doing the full tang knives. No, everything's going to be for the new stuff that I'm doing is going to be all hidden tang knives. So I have to create a whole new like pathway to construction, and it's been so much fun to problem solve the best way to do it, and I'm just like, I'm so pumped.
It's cool. Like you said, there's a system there, so you can just, that can be happening while you're doing other stuff. That I love it.
I tell you what, that is the best part about being a maker. It ain't ever the final. I mean, I talked to Jimmy Duresa, he says the finishing is always the best. Not for me, man. Figuring out how to do it and get into a flow state and finding out these efficiencies. Like, I got four grinders. Every different grinder has a different attachment on them. Mm. And I'm going down the line, one to the next, and it's just like, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. and you create this, you can create these efficiencies that creates this satisfaction in you, and you're like fucking around with the cosmos, you're fired up. I'm on fucking, fuck that mouse. I don't give a fuck about that goddamn mouse. The cat can kick his own, kiss his own ass too. Probably does.
Well, look, we got lots to get on with. I know we got new sections, we got all sorts, and it's only me and you. So I'm going to run through a couple of sponsors before we go any further.
Do it.
First off,
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, Knife Talk.
Whoa. Go to knifetalk.net/heat, and I've got that link down in the bio as well. And that will take you to Salt Ceramics, and they are distributors of Evenheat. They've got some already built up. You'll get $75 off the list price, and you'll also get free shipping in the US. So make sure you click that link down in the bio. Also going to tell you about Texas Fire Supply. TexasFireSupply.com. They've got everything you could possibly need as a maker, whether you're a knife maker, a bladesmith, whatever you want to call yourself, even farriers. They've got everything for you, including Indasa Rhino Wet, which is the stuff that, I mean, the three of us use all the time. If you're doing any sort of hand sanding, you're better off using Indasa Rhino Wet, seriously. And they sell it there at Texas Fire Supply. And if you put in Knife Talk 10, you'll get 10% off your whole order. So anything you put in the cart, you get 10% off the whole order. So go take a look, TexasFireSupply.com. Okay, let's do some questions. We've got lots of questions from people. They've been DMing us on Instagram. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And the first is from Dupree Knives. He says, what are your thoughts on AI-generated images and art? And should it be considered art at all? Is it AI just another tool like a CNC machine, or does it completely remove the maker from the creation? If you're looking for some examples, take a look at images created by the AI called Midjourney. This is very relevant for me at the moment, actually, because yeah. I've been speaking a lot with my wife, she's been using this AI tool for her work, and it's like a writing tool, and it's unbelievable. You tell it what you want it to write, in what sort of style, what emotions you want to convey, and it spits out this like amazing stuff, and it's just like, oh, geez. And I'm hearing about, you know, people writing songs using it and stuff now as well. And you're thinking, is this the death of creativity? And the thing is, the barrier to entry is so simple. I mean, he's mentioned here, is it like using CNC machine? It's not, because that's a whole skill that you need to learn. And, you know, a hell of a skill to learn as well if you learn to use CNC machines. But these AI-generated, whether it's images or music or words, it's simple. You literally just type what you want. The barrier to entry is so, so simple. And the thing is, because the result is different every time, people can't actually tell that it's AI-generated. Because, I mean, if you were to Google it, for example, it's not as if like there's a past paper that's up there. They can see, oh, you've taken it from there. It's generated on the fly every time. It's completely different. It's a little scary. It's a little scary. And I think, it's, you know, it's good to see this kind of intelligence that, you know, that we can make things do what we want them to do, but it is removing creativity. It really is. And it is a bit of a worry.
It's interesting thinking of,
Salim, what are your thoughts on it? Because we haven't really mentioned this kind of stuff before.
It's what's interesting is we think about like all the different levels of what a lot of knife makers would refer to as cheating.
Mm, yeah.
And I think that what's interesting is you can use technology and you can just say, okay, well, here's a perfect example. Like when you and I were kids, our teacher says you won't ever have a, you know, you most likely, you better learn math because you probably won't have a calculator on you all the time.
Hmm. Well, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's, I mean, now we're like, I mean, come on. I mean, it's like, yeah, of course we do. And there are different levels of innovation that are helpful, you know. Like, perfect example is I'm trying to do these curves on the spine of a knife. Mm. And you can't, with a 2x72 belt, it's hard to make it, you know, make a curve. So sometimes in order to get it rounded on the inside, you know what I'm talking about?
On the inside, the undergrip, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, on the inside, well, more or less. Sometimes you have to use a hand file and just try to look for, you know, in your mind, you should say, okay, I need to make sure that the lowest spot is not a flat spot. I don't have this in file, whatever, you know, grinders and stuff. But if you had like a laser jet, you could use CAD and then you could put one line, another line, and then you could create that arc perfectly, right? Yeah. So it's almost like taking away a lot of that hardship of like, how do we make sure there are no kinks in this line, right?
Yeah.
But you're right. AI is a totally different situation because it's like it's trying, the whole idea of even calling it AI is that it's like somebody, it's pushing along an idea that you've already had or kind of had, and it's using, you know, whatever it's using to make it happen. I frankly, I'm not a fan. And I know that there had been some posts, and Mreko had mentioned too, that there was some of these AI generated images are like stealing, I don't know if it's stealing, but just like using artists' original ideas and kind of like,
Something
like that?
Yeah. And there's going to be some sort of fallback to this as well, because all of these AI tools, they all explicitly say that they own the copyright to whatever it generates. So when you're seeing people making, whether it's art or whether they're using it to write lyrics to a song, these people are going to be getting their money back one day because they've invested so much money into this. And this is how they're going to get their money. They own the IP to everything. They own the copyright to what's being generated. So it's fine to play with. But when you start using that sort of commercially and making money off the back of what that's generated, they're going to want their piece of flesh at some point. So... yeah, it is a really strange one. And, you know, I can see how he's liking it to sort of CNC, because it's taken a different route. It's not right. Taken the traditional route. But I mean, I get stuff laser cut and water jet cut, and I know you do as well.
It's not adding creativity.
It's not, and it's a completely different skill that you need to learn to do it, you know? It's like using a different machine, whether you get a different grinder with a different attachment. It's using a different machine.
But I would imagine that it does use algorithms of information that's already out there.
The AI systems certainly do. Oh yes, definitely. Yeah. And if you're looking to generate an image, for example, in the background, they'll do like a Google image search, and they'll find, you know, 10,000 images of something, and they won't take bits of them, but they look at the characteristics of those images and then apply them to what it's going to generate. It is. I do find it really interesting, but at the same time, as somebody who, you know, basically my income comes from being creative, and if there's going to be tools which can let anybody do that, it is a bit worrying. It really is.
Can I say something respectfully?
Yeah, sure.
To our audience, I'm talking to you, but I'm probably going to allude to some of our audience.
Okay.
Have you? I'm saying this respectfully. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, I wonder if he's talking about me, probably am. Respectfully. Have you noticed that the people who do the AI of themselves is a specific type of person?
I haven't seen anybody do that, no.
I got a couple of knuckleheads on Facebook who have inserted themselves into an AI art generator.
Okay.
And they come back like a character from Dune or something that. Or
a Knight of the Realm.
Science fiction. Yeah, they're like gorgeous and they're... You know, it's usually there's some like goggles on their head or, you know, like, Caesar's wreath of laurels. And there's like, it's all of a sudden they're like off the cover of some science fiction magazine. Mm. And I love how I have a couple goofballs who just are so proud of it. And they're just like, this isn't you, you fucking dork. this is, but they like, all of a sudden it's just like, they all have these scarves and their hair is perfect. And
it's like having a filter on, but it's another level. It's another level.
God.
To that. Yeah.
And there's a specific person who's like holding on to it. Like, look what I look like. It's like, no, you don't really look like that. You fucking wacko.
Idiot. Yeah.
So respectfully, the audience would be like, I did that. I'm like, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about a couple specific people and I'm not talking about our listeners.
Of course. But look, if you're going to use something to make your work better, I'm all for that. But when it takes away creativity, I'm not. Which leads me very nicely onto a new sponsor we've got.
Let's hear about it.
So we just mentioned that I often get stuff laser cut and water jet cut out, particularly if I'm doing batches because it saves time. But that does require a skill. It requires a skill of using sort of 2D software to design that. And we've used these guys in the past, KnifePrint.com. They've got a brand new editor. So if anybody's used KnifePrint.com before, or if you haven't, you don't know what it is, it's an online 2D CAD system where you can design knives, and they've got special tools, especially for knives. You can design knives. If you've never done any sort of CAD before, there's a whole sort of learning center where you can learn how to do it. It's super, super simple. But what's great about KnifePrint is they've partnered up with different people around the world who can then get it cut out for you, whether it's laser or water jet. So you can see exactly how it'll look. It'll render the image for you in sort of 3D, so you can see how it would look when it's cut out. Say what steel you want, how many you want, the thickness. Press print as if you're printing a document on your laptop. And in the post, you'll get these bits of steel perfectly cut out to the exact dimensions of the drawing that you've done, you know, using their editor. So go take a look, knifeprint.com. I know they're working really hard on version 2 of their editor at the moment, but you can try it for free. There's nothing to lose. Go take a look. They're good guys too. It's a father and son, and they're building this together. Knifeprint.com. Go take a look.
Look at that. Look at that.
There we go. It is amazing. It really is amazing. And if you've never done any sort of CAD before, this is the perfect system because you don't need to download any software. There's no sort of licensing because some of this CAD stuff is pretty, pretty expensive. But this isn't. And there's a whole learning center you can use for free and learn how to do it. So, yeah, go take a look. KnifePrint.com.
Perfect.
Do you want to take the next question?
Yes, sir. Diego LePen, our old friend from Italy, says, Diego LePen, hey, guys, I have a long question. I have a question for you. Sorry, Jeff, it's too long.
It is a long question, yes.
All right, I'll get through it. How do you feel about makers putting the emphasis on the materials rather than the quality of their work? As an example of my little niche, I'm a leather worker, and I've been seeing a wave of new guys since the pandemic, mostly with marketing backgrounds, making extremely simple stuff, i.e. card holders and keychains. They all look exactly the same, but they don't. But they sell them at exorbitant prices, justifying the cost of the materials they use, be it exotics like crocodile or snakeskin or stingray, or the extremely expensive shell cordovan. I don't know what that is. But fine. It seems to me that this is taking away from the focus of the craftsmanship, putting at a disadvantage crafters using less expensive materials but creating far better items in terms of quality just because their product is seen as worse by the common buyer given the cost difference. So emphasizing material cost that, rather than the quality of the product. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a difficult one, that, because I don't think you can blame people for marketing their stuff well, because that's part of the gig, you know. If you're an independent maker, you need to market your stuff, and we see lots of people. I'm not saying Diego is, but we see lots of people getting really salty about other people marketing better than them, so they'll try and pick at their work instead. I think, look, if the work isn't up to scratch, there's a problem. But if they're doing simple stuff and they're marketing it well and selling it at a good price, I mean, all power to them, I think, you know? And maybe we could take some lessons from people who are doing that. I'm not saying, you know, become snake oil salesman and you know, lie about what we're selling. But I think if we could market them and sell them, well, that's what we're here to do, surely.
There is something similar in the knife making game where one of the things that we've talked about, and I've completely changed my opinion on it, and I'm completely for it, is, you know, there's a very cart before the horse attitude of, well, you know, I'm doing okay, but if I make this material out of, you know, Damascus or something like that, my price goes up. And, you know, you're seeing, and I've changed. Before I was just like, don't do it, you know, master what you know, get good at what you're doing. But now I'm just like, you know what? Do it. If you can do it, do it. Mm. And I think that concept of like, if you had a basic, I could understand that if you were getting into leather working and you would say to yourself, I'm getting pretty good at this card holder. And if I just use a little bit of this, you know, alligator cloaca or whatever, you know, the people sell that. People sound like, you know, marketing, they're using alligator asshole or something.
Oh, jeez.
You know, God. They're using a very specific part of the alligator where it's like, this is it. Only one. There's only one asshole in this alligator and you're going to get it as a card holder. No, but seriously, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, it's just like, there's only so much, there's only, you know, leather's leather.
Yeah.
But if you had a cow asshole, all of a sudden, that would be like as a selling point. Yeah, because there's only one.
Everybody's trying to sort of, you know, show something different. I think that we've mentioned in the past as well that we often get, you know, requests to add you know, like grandma's pubic hair into the handle. Or just something ridiculous.
Whoa, you got that one?
You know, something I have, not that one specifically.
You've
but,
got
you know.
That one too, I should say.
But, you know, we often get these strange requests, and I think it is people just wanting something different. And it reminds me of something that I sent you earlier today, an ad I saw on Facebook. People making rings using human teeth. Like their relatives' dead,
it's unbelievable.
Dead relatives' teeth, and I'm like, oh Jesus, British teeth as well. Ugh.
But, oh, God. It's so. I mean, I can understand. Like I was joking about that. I was joking about the, you know, the alligator asshole. But it's true. I mean, it is not. I'm not really joking. But the fact is all of a sudden, you've made not only is the alligator skin more exclusive. But each one only has one asshole. Yeah. So it's like, it all of a sudden, it, like the price goes up because it's like this one very specific part of the alligator skin. Yeah. And I think that it's like, you know what? If you're a small business person and that makes it happen and alligator assholes are your market, fucking cut them alligators up and stretch them assholes out.
But I don't understand. The hole is the zero part, isn't there?
That's where you stick the cards or the coins or something. But I'm not even kidding. Like I'm not even. I wish I was making this up, but it's 100% true. Stingray dicks and all that stuff. It's all. I mean, it's a high selling point.
Exotic materials. Yeah. Okay. Erotic materials, maybe.
Well, I mean, it's more exclusive because there's only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like beef cheeks. If you go out for dinner, I'm just saying, you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about.
It's an American
thing. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, you know, when I was growing up in Ohio, while I was in college in Ohio, we would fish for walleye. It's a very specific fish. But one of the big things is you would go out for cheeks, walleye cheeks, and you cut this little tiny nugget out, and it was very, very advantageous because there's only two of them, you know, or like the oyster on a chicken.
Chicken, yeah.
Very,
yeah.
Very specific. Well, there you go. Diego, I say, you know, you heard from me, man. Get some of them assholes, stretch them out, and get yourself some of that tanning lotion or tanning bed. I don't know how you make that leather. Coin purses.
There you go. Dan Pedersen Knives says, I've recently just bought a surface grinder and it's got the original stone wheels on the grinder. Would you recommend converting the surface grinder to run belts or should I stick with the stones? What are the pros and cons?
So before he wrote this and I asked him to kind of elaborate because I wasn't sure what he was talking about. I thought, for some reason, I thought maybe he was talking about a bench grinder, but it's this big unit and it has a magnetic chuck on the bottom and you put your steel on there and it has a wheel that's over it and then you can lower the wheel.
Yeah, I got it.
Kind of like a milling machine and you can kind of go back and forth to flatten the knife.
Yeah.
And it has like a stone wheel like you would see on a bench grinder that you'd get a cheap bench grinder somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So that's the question.
Should and I've seen lots of people converting these to belts as well. I think if it's currently running well and if the stone is dressed well, and I suppose that's the thing that the maintenance on that stone, you'd need some sort of dressing tool to keep it running well. You know, keep using it until it's not running well, and then maybe consider using belts. I've only ever used ones with belts, so I couldn't tell you. But I know, you know, big industrial ones are generally using the stones. But yeah, I couldn't tell you. But I'd say if it's working, it's working. You know, don't change it. But yeah, I mean, have you used any of the stones before, Jeff?
I've never used them before, but I have watched Jonathan Porter made one into one that runs on belts.
Yeah.
And he kind of made a CNC machine with this belt grinder. And it's with the surface grinder that he converted over with belts. And the cool thing about the belts is you can all of a sudden switch your grits. So you're not like married to whatever the stone grit is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, you know, he's figured out a way, especially like I can imagine if you had a surface grinder, and I know that I've done this with the Broadbeck surface grinder, is If you pushed up part of the if you kind of raised up where the edge would be, you can actually grind off your bevel. You can do a lot of the bevel work on the surface grinder. So like if you were to figure out a way to do that, you could probably, and if you didn't have a plunge line, you could probably figure out a way to do a satin finish with a surface grinder with different belts. Mm. You know, you just shim out. You just shim out where the edge is, grind it all down on something, you know, coarse, and then finish it off with a 220, and bingo, bango, bongo. You would have. You'd be able to do your grinds and start your satin finish.
Yeah.
So I would. I would go for that.
There we go. Okay. Let's just take one or two more because I know we've got lots to get through. Chris Adams. Hey, folks, I've got a question for you. I like light-colored G10 and Corby bolts. Do you have any tips or tricks to keep the light G10 clean when sanding? I find preventing the metal dust getting into the G10 a pain in the ass, especially at higher grits. He said, thanks, and I like the show. So what he's saying, I mean, as Jeff obviously knows, he uses a lot of G10, but G10 can be sort of porous, so it can take on some of that. You know, when you're hand sanding specifically, it can take on some of that sort of the debris, I suppose, and especially those lighter G10s. Ugh. So what do you, Jeff? What do you do, Jeff, apart from not use light colored G10s?
I did last year. I was using light colored G10s all year.
Yeah.
I used a turquoise blue, and it was all of a sudden you have to be very aware of the cleanliness of your belts. Like I was trying to do as much grinding of the handles or sculpting of the handles or carving of the handles with belts, and I was using slack belts. And I had to be real careful on how high the grit was, because the higher the grit was, the more the belt would pull some of the brass from the Corby bolt and then embed it into the light colors.
Yeah, and it almost smears it as well, doesn't it? It's weird.
So I was being very careful that I wouldn't go past with the belts. I wouldn't go past like 400. I would try to not. I would 400 was the finest I would use, just because 800, which I love, it just smears it. And then making sure I'm using clean belts the whole time, and then staying the fuck away from the buffer, unfortunately. Mm. Because as soon as the buffer hits the brass Corby, it just yanks dirt everywhere. Something it oxidizes or just like starts, it's so fine that it just kind of smears dirt all over the place. So it's, you got to keep everything clean, and probably one of the reasons why I'm sticking with the black G10 this year, because I'm like, I want to lean on that buffer like you would believe.
Yeah, and fresh belts too obviously help.
Yeah,
because they've got obviously more abrasive in them, you're not smearing so much.
I will say this as well: if you want to clean, like my wife says to me, she's like, when are you going to start making white handles? Because I really do. I would love to make white handles. White handles with red accent, I love it. I've done it before, and it's a fucking disaster because it's like you just touch it and it gets dirty. And I said to her, well, as soon as they figure out a way to make, you know, white easy to clean, you know, with the G10. What I did do when I had to use the white was I got blue Scotch-Brite scrubbies, which are meant for the kitchen, but they don't leave dirt. Mm. They don't scratch, so they won't put a satin finish on. I use that with soap and water a lot, and then I'm under the impression there's like a Mr. Clean bleach gun or cleaner pen that's supposed to be pretty good for that too. Mm. And I think what did Mareko said about, he was using some guitar cleaning, maybe that's it.
Yeah, fret polishing like pads basically. Right. Yeah. So pretty much like Scotch-Brite pads. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you know. It sucks. You got to be real careful. Lots of belts. I mean, lots of like Windex and acetone doesn't do it all the time. And
yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Can we, let's just do two more. Let's do Dark State. And I want to do BK Messer too.
Okay.
BK Messer is a good one.
Just a sec. Whilst we're on the subject of abrasives.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
Combatabrasives.com. And if you're in Canada, you can also get Combat Abrasives from one of their distributors, which is maritimeknifesupply.com. And they do more than combat abrasives. They do steel, they do belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. But yeah, they are the Canadian distributor for Combat as well. So go take a look. They also sell Rhino Wet, Rhino Stick, at maritimeknifesupply.com, and they've got a similar deal with their belts too. So go take a look.
I made a mistake. Let's save BK Messer for next week.
Okay, yeah.
One of the reasons why we're so like high energy right now is because Craig's got to catch a flight. So
well, in the morning. Like, it's late here, but I need to get in the morning. So yeah, I need to get
We're hauling ass. So Dark State Forge says, and we got a listener, good listener feedback too.
Cool.
Dark State Forge says, here's a question. I'm trying to update my cookware, and I've already gotten a high carbon steel pan on the way. What other pots and pans do you feel would be nice to have in a good home cooking experience? Size, style, ceramics, hex clad? Maybe a good way to approach it would be if you could choose your top 3 to 5, what styles, brands, and cookware would you recommend? All the best and suck shit.
Ah, okay. I went through this last year. We've always had cupboards full of old pans and shit and just, you know, terrible stuff. But last year we just got rid of them all and we just bought like just like one of each that we need. Right. So we've got Le Creuset, all of them. So they're all ceramic, so yeah. Cast iron coated in ceramic for the sort of casseroles and the stuff that you put on the hob or maybe in the oven, and the pans are basically a carbon steel pan, all Le Creuset stuff, all super heavy, and they're just awesome, honestly. And rather than have 15 different pans, we've got like maybe 5, maybe 6. So most of them are used like every day as well. And they're just amazing. They're just amazing. They hold heat for ages as well. And that's always a good sign. When you turn everything off, if it just goes immediately cold, you just think, oh, geez, you know, they were thin and shit. It's in my mind, it's definitely worth spending that just that little bit more. They're not super expensive, but they'll last forever. And it's just a joy to cook with.
That's the big pan. That's the big, like, if we're doing a stew or something like that, that's the one I use a little. We say Le Creuset, but
Le Creuset, yeah. So so they're generally known for their sort of casserole dishes, you know, that you right. put up on the top or into the oven. But they also do pans as well, like frying pans and that kind of thing too.
I have two pans I had since I was one I had in culinary school, and I've had it ever since. And then we had another one. We had I like the all clad. Stainless steel pans. I have a 12-inch stainless steel pan, and I have a 12-inch rondeau. Rondeau is like it's like a saute pan, but it's got high sides. It's got like 4-inch sides. I've had those two pans for like over 20 years, and they are just dynamite. I love them. I think all clad makes dynamite stainless steel. I hear great things about what John Medellin's doing. With those carbon steel pans, I know that I've seen one in person. It look awesome. Sometime maybe I'll get one. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of those all clad. They'd last forever. And I'll want every few years I'll get a inexpensive nonstick pan, and then I'll just like I don't
be disappointed with it a month later every time.
No, we've had a couple. They've lasted like 3 or 4 years, and I'm not paying a lot for them. And nonstick is nice to have, you know. Mm. Nonstick is nice to have. So, get yourself a good. Yeah, that's it. We hit it all.
Yeah, yeah. And whatever you get, make sure even the pans can be put into the oven as well. So none of these plastic handled pieces of shit.
One thing, I have gotten all my wooden spoons from Boot Hill Kitchen, Jared Thatcher's wife.
I've got one. Yes,
yeah. They're awesome. I get the spoochula. The spoochula is the word.
It's that sort of teardrop shape, so you can get into the corners of the pan.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. She makes. I got a couple of them. I've sent them as gifts. The Boot Hill Kitchen makes awesome kitchenware.
Cool. So. Cool. Okay, let's just do one more then. Where are we? Paul Jansen. Here's a question for you. What's the best way to drift a hole in the handle without having the backside of the hole blow out? I've used a chisel to cut, then a drift punch to widen, and then my anvil horn to round out, but there's always a part that looks like shrapnel got blown out the back.
Right.
Is there a secret to this, or do I just suck at it? I do use the hardy hole and the smaller round hole in the anvil too.
Punching holes has become for me one of my favorite things to do when I'm making bottle openers, because there's a system involved, and a lot of it has to do with the management of the heat. And I'm going to do it quick so we can kind of move through it. But when you're punching a hole, a lot of people just think you're just driving through, like a center punch through, and it's not the case. Your punch is flat, but it's not 90 degrees from the taper. It's like at an angle. And what it, the reason why it's an angle is because you want it to cut. You want it to shear, right? So if it was flat, so what I do is I'll bump it flat on the grinder, and then I'll just dress it so the edges are very crisp, but it's not a 90 degrees. It's like a very subtle angle. So the first thing you do is you have your steel on the flat of the anvil, or maybe you might want to have an aluminum plate just because you don't want to be gouging into your anvil.
Yeah.
And then you have a little bit of water. So the first thing you do is you get that, you know, you mark where your hole is going to be, and then you get it in the forge, you get it hot, you get your drift there, and do yourself a favor, get a soft hammer. Don't be using your forging hammer to drive drifts. That's day one shit. Don't do it because it's going to, you know, gall up your hammer. You get your piece of steel down onto your aluminum plate or what if you feel good enough on your, you know, there's that ledge on the side of the anvil that's usually also for the cutting shoulder or something like that. And then you drive until you feel the anvil underneath you, right? Then you take off the punch, and then you take a little bit of water on that drift and drop a little bit of water into that hole. What's going to happen is you're creating this little disc. And as you're driving the punch, what's happening is you're compressing that piece of material so it's very, very thin, and the anvil or the whatever, your plate underneath it, is sucking the heat out of that little plate. So you should have this little very crisp hole. You take a little bit of water, you drip a little bit of water on there, and then you let it cool, and you don't put it back in the forge. That's the number one problem. People put it back in the forge, and you end up making bubble gum going back and forth. So you're sucking out that little disc, you flip it over, you can see this halo, you see where your thing is, you put the punch on that halo, and then you drive, and then at the very end, you put it over the hardy hole just to kind of knock that slug out.
Knock it through, yeah.
The reason why you get a lot of times it's because you're not doing the initial punch long enough. You really want to get it cold. You want to get that little disc as cold as possible, so the drift will shear it when you flip it to the other side. Otherwise, you're going to get that, you know, like explosion.
Mush. Yeah.
Right. And then the other thing is if you're driving it too deep into, you should only really need to drive it into the hardy hole at the very end just to kind of fire it through, and that your drift is not hitting the anvil. So it's like kind of getting rid of that little slug. And if you're hardy hole is very crisp or it's fucked up, it's going to embed in the other way too. But if you do it nice and easy, make sure that disc is really kind of compressed and tight and cold. You want to shear the other side when it's very cold, because you'll shear out and not just kind of gum out. Sorry, that took
makes
a long
sense.
Time.
Yeah, cool.
But it's great if you can do it. Usually, you should be able to do it in one heat, and it's very satisfying. And then, as long as there's nothing around on the other side, you're not going to have like a lot of edging and stuff like that.
Nice.
Woo!
Nice one. Okay, you prepare yourself, ready for our next bet. I'm going to tell everybody about Dharma Steel. They're amazing. They make some of the best sort of stainless Damascus that's out there. Go take a look. DharmaSteel.se. They're Dharma Steel Lab on Instagram, so you can see the kind of stuff people are making with it. Really, really special stuff. Beautiful, beautiful patterns, and easy to work with too. So if you're looking to make that special piece, go take a look. DharmaSteel.se. And if you use Knife Talk on checkout once you have your account, you'll get 10% off your order too.
We're hauling ass.
We are. We got something new, Jeff. What have we got?
Well, we have listener feedback and we have our new bit. Listener feedback will fit perfectly into the new bit. Listener feedback, if you're listening to the podcast, you can interact with us by going to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and then you can send us your, you know, listener feedback, your questions, DMs, you know, whatever. And in this case, we got some runoff beef. All beef review a couple episodes ago was a big hit. We had a couple late squeezers, and I'm happy to take your. If you got some runoff beef, ladies and gentlemen, send it in. I will read it in the listener feedback. This one comes from our friend Pioneer Road in Australia. Here's my beef: the cost of international shipping from the States to Australia. Thumbs down, dude. Yes. Shipping internationally, now that we are we know each other globally, shipping's got something, got to happen, because it's ridiculous.
Yes,
ridiculous.
We've had a Christmas a bit where we've had people sending stuff over for the, you know, for the kids and so on, and every time they don't deliver to us, we just get a note saying we tried to deliver, and it's like, well, you didn't even try. So we've got to go to the post office, then they hit us with a bill. Then it's like, well, this is €40, and it's like, well, I don't know what it is yet. I don't even, right. You know, and they're like, well, we can't open it. Are you going to pay the €40 or not? End up paying the €40 for having some sort of €10 piece of shit, you know? And that's happened so many times. The whole system's broken.
I people want, for us to send a T-shirt to the UK, just the T-shirt, it's going to cost $40 for shipping.
Yeah.
And we can't even guarantee that you're going to get it in 3 weeks.
Yeah. No, you can't.
So who the fuck would pay for that, the service, if you can't? I mean, it's just like not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's 22 miles between the UK and France, and getting stuff to or from the UK at the moment is just an absolute nightmare. And they're just making up costs. Every time it's different. It's just terrible. Terrible.
I have a bad feeling that it's going to get worse. And I think a lot of it's going to be because of Amazon. And I'm convinced.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That the U.S. Postal Service, other postal services, UPS, FedEx, they're all slowly, they're not doing as much Amazon as Amazon is doing. Amazon, they got their own fleet of fucking trucks. You said it first, and then now all of a sudden, they're Amazon Prime trucks all over the place. Yeah. At some point, there's going to be a pile of fucking UPS drivers with not as much as they used to ship, and the prices are going to go up. Guaranteed. And for me to send something UPS from my small town, which is like 20 miles from Manhattan, it's $40 for UPS.
Yeah.
And I know they're union guys, and God bless them. We know a number of the drivers, and I love them, but it's going to get worse. Okay. Chris Rosendahl has a great question. Listener feedback. He says, can I ask if some of the ABS community have been asked to be interviewed? I feel like Jerry Fisk would make a great interview. Dan Quisenberry, Mike Quisenberry, or Smith Hand Forge Knives also are of interest. Basically, the early interview type podcasts were great, and I'd like to see some interviews if possible. So if you are a listener, if you're old school, you'll know that Craig started Knife Talk back in, you know, 5 years ago, five plus years ago.
Yes, five, 6 years, yeah.
And you started as a interview show.
It was, but what I found happened is you end up just asking the same old questions. I know everybody's got a different story, but it gets quite repetitive after a while. It would be interesting to do some. And I mean, quite often it's like today, Mareko can't be with us. So, we also have the conversation. Should we get somebody else in as well? But an issue we have then is like the sound quality. We don't know what systems they're using. We don't know if they've got a mic, and it can become a real sort of production. So yeah, it is quite difficult. But we can give it some thought. Definitely.
It's what's interesting is also, I feel like the Knife Talk immediate family of Knife Talk, Artisans of Steel, that's Mareko's podcast, and my podcast Full Blast have kind of we've done a good job in terms of not being Knife Talk 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, we cover different ground. Yeah, definitely.
And like Mareko gets Mareko gets the best of the best, and they're talking deep diving into, you know, steals. And I know he's got a great one with all of them are like heavy duties. I mean, like top of the food chain. And I get guys, maybe we might not talk about, I also see Full Blast and Knife Talk as getting people introduced into what we're doing. So that's the hard part with Full Blast is I'm trying to make sure that it sounds good. And I usually spend a lot of time in advance making sure that people, sometimes I'll send microphones and stuff like that. It can be tough. And especially with three people and an interview with a fourth person, sometimes it can be a little tough, but yeah. We will definitely have more interviewers.
Yeah. By the way, Jeff, I did listen to your Full Blast with Jesse this week.
Yeah.
And you mentioned me in it. You said that I love getting in the comments and winding people up online.
You do.
I barely go online these days.
Oh, well, you used to.
I used to have a bit of fun. Yeah, it got to the point where I'd had enough. And then I maybe had about 6 months of just like, yeah. But
isn't it nice to like stay out of the fray?
It's lovely. Oh, it's lovely.
It's like unbelievable. I've said this on, Knife Talk before. We got these like community these community Facebook groups. And these people I don't think these people work. Like, there are these threads about, like, what's going on, you know, like, it could be, like, about a fire hydrant.
Yeah.
And it's, like, 45 people are talking about a specific fire hydrant and the color. I mean, it's like, do people work?
Yeah.
I'm stupefied, and I also have friends who like to fucking stir shit up, and I wonder, what do you get out of that? But I just remember that my favorite thing you did is we had one guy who was not a fan of what we were doing here, Knife Talk, and you beat the brakes off them and then immediately afterwards blocked them. That was like the hardest core move of all time. And then you reported them and I was like, you were good. So.
That's former me that was.
Yeah, former you. All right, well, we might as well get into the new bit.
Let's do it. Yeah, I'm excited. Let's do it.
All right, so we're getting a lot of nice messages. So basically the idea was the name of this new bit is Why Me, Why Me, Why Does This Always Happen to Me? Because as knife makers, there'll be something that we do and we know that maybe something's going wrong or not going wrong, but we don't know why this is always happening. So I thought what you could do is if you have a why me, why does this always happen to me? And it could be not even a mistake. It could be like something that you just always do and it's just the way it is. My mother, when she made scrambled eggs, they were always brown. Like she just, and when I was younger, I didn't understand why. Like, why they look like they're overcooked. You know, like, that's it. Like, it's not terrible. I mean, it wasn't great. But it was, it was like, why, you know, why does this always happen to me?
Yeah.
And here comes the first one from EDC Gearhouse, who's one of he's an awesome, awesome dude. Really just sends a lot of stuff in. He goes, I don't know if this is a dilemma or if you guys can relate, but when I do an orange peel finish, the wire wheel on our bench grinder always manages to rape my hand harder than a newbie at the state pen. That was unfortunate, but I understand.
Yeah.
Happens every time.
Those wire
wheels. I can't
wear
gloves. Like, what'd you say?
Those wire wheels, they're just, yeah.
Oh, I thought you got one of them hard ones in there. You're going to give them a good one. And you can't wear gloves because it's just not the same. So why, how would you, what's the problem?
Somebody says to his wife, I can't wear gloves. It's just not the same.
Oh, EDC Gearhouse, you just got Lockwooded or something. Well, what do you think?
Sorry, I was looking for the childish dick joke in there somewhere.
What was the
it wasn't really a question, was it?
Well, it's something that always happens. He has a hard time doing this wire wheel finish. The orange peel seems to me, I would think, that it's like kind of like a mirror finish, but you're like almost raising it to create a texture. You're like almost like it's like a orange peel. It's like I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically, how do you use these wire wheels on a bench grinder, and that won't?
I don't. I've used them once, and it was actually on an angle grinder, and it was just the worst thing. You get these bits of wire coming out and like stabbing you in the leg. Yeah. It was horrible.
That actually there's a couple. What I was thinking, we were talking about last week about buffers. And I was talking about when the guys and I used to do mirror finish. Mm. We would screw everything down on a piece of wood, and then we would have a bar, just like maybe, you know, all right, if we're using a piece of 2x4, maybe the bar is, you know, had enough room that I could put the 2x4 between the bar and the wheel, and I could kind of pull down the bar, and then that would put the pressure up on the wheel. I would think that something like that would be the move, where if you could kind of mount your knife. I think EDC Gearhouse does a lot of restoration stuff.
Yeah.
So if you could figure out a way to mount it to a bar so your hands aren't there, and then you can just kind of like go back and forth, I think that might be the move. But what you were saying too, you had mentioned something that I was thinking about as well. Have you ever thought about the braided wire wheels on a right angle grinder? I know what you're thinking. That's crazy. You can get them cup. You can get cups, and then you can get the Ninja Stars, the ones that are like a wheel.
Yeah.
If you figured out a way to hold some down, and maybe put if you could get one of them like a guard on it, maybe you could do that, and then you can actually just hold the wire. Maybe that's the terrible idea. I think getting your hands away is the most important thing.
Yeah. Personally, those kind of finishes I'm not into anyway, because you're sort of trying to almost like mimic like something else, you know? And I don't know. It's if you're trying to mimic sort of hammer marks and stuff, you know? I find it a bit strange. But personally, I just keep well away from wire wheels.
Yeah, every wire wheel is different. The braided ones. And the other thing is if you get a brand new wire wheel, that's like, you know, punji stick ninja time. I mean, that's when they start to fly. I always think, especially on a bench grinder, they just shoot like crazy. And on a wire cups on for grinders and stuff like that. Oh, I always get their braided wheels because I feel like they don't shoot out as much. But the first few hours of use, they're the most like, you know, flingy. Actually, something happened when back in the day when Carl was here. I was using a right angle grinder. This was crazy. I think I even mentioned on Knife Talk. It scared the living shit out of me. One of those little wires flew out, raised over the top of the palm of my hand, went into my skin, went through a vein.
Oh.
Right?
Oh.
And then I was like, oh, you know, like, you know, you sometimes you'll get a wire in your shirt or something like that, and you just take it out. And you take it out, and that's the end of it. So I'm pulling out this wire out of the top of my hand, and all of a sudden I had pierced the vein on the top of my hand, and my hand started filling up. Of course I called my wife, and she just started like asking me a million questions, but it just started filling up with blood in the top of my hand. I was like, it was like slowly filling up. I was watching the top of my hand like a water balloon. It was crazy. And then I called my wife. I immediately put my hand down on it, and that kind of like, I don't know, squished it back in. I don't know what the fuck. I mean, there was no blood. And I called my wife, and she asked to see if it was an artery. Told me what I would know if it was an artery or not. But it was those little, I mean, I'd never seen anything like it. And it was like, I was filling that top of my skin of my hand was filling up with blood. It was bizarre. Well, there you go. That's you know, better than a cloaca, I guess. But here we go. Paul Jansen says, why me, why me? Why does this always happen to me? Here's a question for why me, why does this always happen to me? I drill out pinholes and I dry fit my handle scales with the pins through them and everything lines up and fits like it's supposed to. Then when I mix up the epoxy and suddenly the pins don't fit right and it's always a struggle to get everything to fit in even though I just did it 30 seconds ago. Why me? Why me? Why does this always happen to me?
It's not just you, believe me. Yeah. Yeah, one of those things. And I sometimes think, is it the wood taking on the epoxy? Is it like shrinking or expanding? What's going on? But I don't know what it is. But
when I did pins, I would my favorite thing to do, because I hated that. I hated pins because of that same reason. Like I see guys doing those like knives with like coffin pins, and I'm just like, how the fuck do they get? Because I've had that same situation. I almost feel like maybe if the tang is tapered or the knife isn't 100%, just that little bit of epoxy pushes everything out of here.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden nothing fits right. And then, so what I started to do with the pins was I would take the pin, make it extra long, and then I put it in a drill gun. And then I would bring it over to the grinder, and then I would turn the drill gun on, and then I would make a very, very thin needle-like taper into the end of the pin. So, and then when I was putting in the pins, I found that if I even drove the pins in with the cordless driver, that would help kind of snug them up. And that's what I was doing, because it's the same thing. You know, you don't want to fuck around with that epoxy, but it's like maybe putting too much epoxy on, maybe it's kind of pushing everything out of here. It's a fucking drag. And that's why I don't do pins anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
All right. There you go.
Yeah, but like you just said, actually, making sure that you put a sort of taper on the end of the pin massively helps, massively, because you won't sort of splay the edge then. And particularly if it's a tight one, sometimes you might put a bit of wood on the end and use it like a hammer and tap them in slightly. Said. Well, yeah. But the last thing you want is for that edge to splay, because then you're breaking a bigger hole. You're boring a bigger hole in. And then you've got more sort of slop in the middle. So, yeah, I always take the edges off just ever so slightly, A-O. Just so it'll find its way in.
And then, A-O again. And it's also can happen, like, I've actually, when I do the, I dry fit everything. I just did a bull elk with an overturned ferrule, like a brass ferrule. Mm. What I do is I drill everything, and then I drill the ferrule too, for the ferrule tube. Mm. And then after everything's dried up, I hit it again with the drill, because sometimes something happens. I mean, sometimes little tiny things happen. And when I put the ferrule in, I put the ferrule tube, the whole length of the tube in the drill, and I kind of slowly kind of compress drive it in. Mm. And sometimes when it hits the steel part, it'll mushroom a little bit, and I got to be really wary about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, all that gluing and everything, it's not exact all the time, and you have to figure out ways in which to. I mean, that's why they rivet over the tops, because like you're fixing a little problem too.
Yeah, yeah. You're giving that mechanical fixing too, but yeah, you're also fixing it. Yeah, makes sense.
So there you go.
Hmm.
We did some listener feedback. We did why me, why does it always happen to me? We can do some more questions. We can do a weird news. We can go into the after show. I know you're fixing to get this thing rolling. We could do whatever you want.
Let's do a question each again. Just one more question, and then we can go to
this is the most
maybe
efficient,
some weird news in an after show.
This is the most efficient knife talk of all time.
This is value for money. This is value for our listener. This is
we have told Dick. We had cloaca jokes, which is not normal for us. And we've had a couple of cloaca jokes. We've run through questions, listener feedback. Why me, and why does this always happen to me? And we're still providing value. There you go.
Extra value show. Okay. Where we go?
Save BK Messer for another time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mr. Monks. This is a good one. You want me to get it? Or you got it?
You go for it. Yeah, go on.
Mr. Monk says, "Hi, chaps. I've been asked to make a couple of oyster knives for a local restaurant owner. This is a first for me, so I was wondering if you could provide a few tips, preferred steel type hardness, one edge or two."
Okay. No edges would be my preference. Think of them like pry bars. You're not cutting, so maybe even like a butter knife edge, you know? You don't want it to be brittle in any sort of way, so you don't need a sharp, sharp edge. You need just enough to get into that hinge and then, you know, pry them open. But yeah, I mean, you make a lot more oyster knives than me. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm going to have Alexander Bull on full blast. He's the guy who makes the titanium.
Yes.
He's going to have
amazing,
him on.
Amazing.
Yeah. Alexander Bull, family of oyster guys. It's going to be interesting. The oyster knife thing is fascinating to me because I've gone from one way to another and back to the original idea. So the original way I learned in culinary school to open oysters was with the New Haven style oyster knife. And the New Haven style oyster knife is short, maybe like 2.5 inches or 3 inches. It's got a kind of a curve on the end. And the reason why you have a curve on the end is I'll get to the curve. So what you do is we have one listener, our guy, who's just like, "I don't want to hear about Jeff's oysters anymore." I'm like, all of a sudden I'm just like, oh shit. Don't Cass, don't be mad, Cass. I'm with you, custom Cass. Don't be worried. So you just really, the idea is you don't even need an edge. You don't need an edge. Well, there's two ways. You don't need an edge. You go into the butt. This is called butt shucking. Go back in the time in the knife talk. We talk about butt shucking. And then you just like crack it open. And then the curve of the New Haven style gets you over the top. So you can kind of release the muscle. There's another type of oyster knife where for younger oysters who have a very much more brittle shell, you kind of go through the side like a butter knife. You want to kind of go through the side because the hinges on the younger farm-raised oysters are much more brittle, and they just you can destroy them, and then you're ruining your oyster and get filled with shell and look like shit. So there's two things. My suggestion would be stay away from carbon steel. That's just my opinion. I mean, if you're working with briny, saltwatery, seawatery oysters, why would you want to fuck around with rust? A knife that can rust, which will rust immediately. I like 440C. I haven't done any with AEBL, but I would imagine something with some nice toughness. The thing is like you. I'm sure any stainless will work, and anything will work. I mean, my dad taught me how to open an oyster knife with a screwdriver. You know, it's you just don't need an edge. And then if you have a very sharp point, you're going to break the point off anyway. So you need is like a blunt. You have to think more of it like a kind of like a almost like a letter opener. A letter opener is almost as much sharpness as you want. Well, I'll ask Alexander and see what he says. He's probably going to say you're crazy. But yeah. And two edges, two sides is better only because all of a sudden you for left-handed and right-handed, well, I guess left-handed and right-handed don't matter. But
no, you just flip them over. Yeah,
I've always seen them kind of like a dagger style.
Yeah.
And get ready for when you give them the bill. Just number two, because oyster knives are the cheapest knives you can get. When you fucking get him for a couple $100, watch him choke down some oysters. He's gonna choke on his own oysters. Oh, his oysters are gonna come back up into his ball sack and get nervous.
Right, I'm gonna do one more question, and then Jeff can tell us all about his grinders, and then we'll head off to an after show. This one is very timely, actually. So Justin Stinson. Hey, guys. Question. When making carbon steel canister Damascus, I see some smiths drill a vent hole in the can and others don't. Which way is better and why? Now, I wouldn't normally pick a question like this because obviously I don't make canister Damascus. But I watched a video this week online and it was our friend Holly from Loftus Knives. And she's doing like a collaboration video with somebody else that I follow, which was weird to see these two worlds colliding. Tempest Guitars, Daisy Tempest, she's a luthier. She makes these beautiful acoustic guitars. But she went to Holly's place and she took a load of old guitar strings and they made canister Damascus with these guitar strings. And Holly did exactly this. She did a vent hole in there and... And they explained why. And I was thinking, why are they? I couldn't understand why they were doing it, but they did explain why. And their reasoning is it's sort of to sort of relieve pressure. So when they put a lot of pressure in there, you know, there's a bit of give. There's a bit of a gap. So that was my sort of that would have been my answer. And the only reason I know that is because of Holly this week. Holly and Daisy, they did this amazing video. So if you haven't seen that, go and take a look. So it's on Daisy's YouTube channel. She's Daisy Tempest. She makes these beautiful acoustic guitars. But she's in Holly's place this week making this a two-part video where they're making a Damascus steel knife. So
Holly's actually the only other host of Knife Talk.
She is actually, yes, the only other host we've ever had. Yeah, we were away and she did like a special, like a one-off show for us. Yeah.
And she won't come back. Like, that's the crazy part. Like, I said, when are you going to come on a full blast? I want to talk to you. And I don't want to, I'm not interested. And I'm just like, well, what the fuck? You know, come on, man. And I'm like, Holly. And I said, all right, I'll stop asking. And then she's, you know, but Holly's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Take a look at that video too, because yeah, it is awesome to see her working.
And the other video to get is Jason Knight's Forge series. Our friend Jason Knight, he did the second series is with Steve Schwarzer, and Steve Schwarzer does the entire series is about Canister Damascus, and he explains how he does it, why he does it, and why he drills the holes. I don't remember. I watched it a while ago, but I think it was this whatever Craig said. And yeah, I would definitely highly recommend, especially now that Jason's going through what he's going through. You want to support him? Get yourself his online series is very good. And rumor has it he's coming on full blast this week. So
nice.
Yeah, we'll find out what's going on with him.
Okay, cool. I think we've answered that quite comprehensively. Jeff, tell me about your grinder system.
Yo, I'm using the Broadbeck Ironworks 2x72 grinder. It is the best. Vertical, horizontal, all the different platens, all the different attachments. I love it. It's made by knife makers for knife makers, woodworkers, sculptors. Anybody who's making anything, you got to take off a little bit of steel or a little bit of wood, or you make some sawdust, you can get yourself one of them Broadbeck Ironworks. If you go to broadbeckironworks.com, you put in the promo code KNIFETALK200, get $200 off all of their grinder packages. They have series of packages, and they're all good prices, and you can get $200 off that. Or if you're looking for a leather sewing machine or a surface grinder or their new sharpening system, which is dynamite. If you put in Knife Talk 100, you're going to get $100 off of either one of those. So go get yourself one of the best in the game. I love my Broadbeck Ironworks grinders. I've been using them like dogs, and they never let me down. So broadbeckironworks.com.
There you go. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you all again next week, where all three of us are back, I believe. Speak to you then. Okay, after show. Here we go.
All right. That was fucking... We were like on the money. I mean, that was like... I'm going to get messages like, you guys were so harried. I'm like, well...
Before we hit record, we were like, we've got a lot to get through, and we'll do our best, see if we can. And we did it.
We did a good job. Yeah. No, we did a good job. I tell you what, I have a couple of funny things I wanted to talk to you about. One is like one of the big news stories in the United States right now is the price of eggs. Apparently, I don't know if this is happening by you, let me find this mess. I have egg prices. So somebody's talking about, you know, I see memes of like these chickens with like gold chains on and stuff like that. And it's the rising cost of eggs in the United States is denting household budgets. Americans in recent years have increased numbers of eggs they consume while reducing the intake of beef and venison. Egg consumption has grown part because the more families are eating them. What the fuck?
Wow. I wonder if that's due to, I mean, we keep chickens here, so we get our own eggs. But this time of the year, we don't get them, so we buy very few eggs a year. So I'm sure the reason would be chicken feed has gone crazy.
Well,
else has gone crazy. You know,
here's what's going on now: as demand for eggs has risen, production in the U.S. has slumped because of an ongoing bird or avian flu epidemic. Uh-huh. Nearly 58 million birds have been infested with avian flu as of January 6th. making the deadliest outbreak in U.S. history. Infected birds must be slaughtered, causing egg supplies to fall and prices to surge. Egg prices in December rose 60% from a year earlier, according to Consumer Index. The price for a dozen large eggs was, a grade A eggs was $4.25 last month. Last month, according to the figures, I personally have seen 18 packs for and dozens for $7. In some states, it can even be hard to find eggs on the shelves, but egg supplies overall are holding up because the total flock of egg-laying hens is down. Sharp prices says will not fall. Sharp says they say the prices will likely not fall again until after new chickens are born without the infestation growing and having them being egg-laying age. So this is like a big problem. So here's what was interesting. And then a New York grocery store owner, Jose Felipe, says the soaring egg costs have caused many customers to change their spending habits. I've seen customers gravitate from buying organic eggs to now more conventional eggs, specifically now the half dozen. Prices have quadrupled in the past 7 months. So what's interesting is how this is going to affect your regular people. Because in the United States, like, breakfast eggs are, that's probably the number one time when people are buying eggs. I'm not talking about like buying bread and cakes and shit like that. But you are ordering bacon, egg, and cheese, and you're having eggs. And the egg consumption in the United States is super duper high. And there's a lot of it's middle class. You know, the rich people are going to be okay with paying $10 a dozen eggs.
Yeah.
But it's like the mom and, truck drivers who just want to, fart in their seats and eat the eggs and sausage sandwiches. It's going to, how much were you willing to pay?
Yeah. And to think of it, it's only what? So there was a big cull of all these chickens.
Right.
I think it's 17, 18 weeks before before they start laying. Could have 17, 18 weeks of expensive eggs, I suppose. Like you said, it's not just that the egg is a product. It's the amount of things that, eggs are used for, when it is like a binding agent in things and all sorts,
And it makes you wonder, restaurant game is your food costs are where you die, like all of a sudden something so basic. And it makes me also wonder, I'm sure that some people are being like, well, I can, obviously a lot of people are not too worried about, all right, the egg prices go up. I mean, they were more worried about gas prices going up. What would you, and I started to think about, if I have to give up eating eggs for a while, I don't mind giving up eating eggs. And it made me wonder, I got a feeling that there's going to be a lot of things in the future that are going to be like, okay, not going to be eaten. Like, there was a scare that you can't eat avocados for a while because we're going to have a problem with avocados, the price of avocados or something like that. What could you give up in your daily thing? And I'm going to ask you some questions and be serious.
Okay.
Be serious.
Okay. Yeah.
Could you give up drinking coffee? Because the price right now for, I know some people pay. I mean, I've seen people pay $20 a pound. Coffee's not cheap.
No. I only have one cup a day. And I enjoy that so much.
Me too.
And I could, obviously, if I had to. I'm sure I'd get some sort of withdrawals from it, because the times when I haven't, had a coffee, later on in the day I've got a bit of a headache and I'm like, why is this happening? They're like, I didn't have a coffee this morning. So I'm pretty sure that, I would feel it for a few days, but I wouldn't want to, no.
No, you wouldn't want to, but let's just say, argument's sake, there's tariffs or whatever. There's some reason, all of a sudden you can't get coffee anymore.
Yeah.
Could you give it up? Coffee for me, I only drink one cup during the day, and then whatever's, I'll make coffee in the morning for me and my wife, and then whatever's left in the pot, I'll pour it in a travel cup and bring it to the shop and just drink it throughout the day. But I could go without it.
So when you say you only have one coffee a day, that's three you've mentioned.
Well, I've started to realize I used to only have one cup, but I didn't want to go to waste. But the only reason why I was getting coffee honestly, was to stimulate my bowels. Like, that was like, I needed to get on that Peloton with emptied out. So I'm like, I got my coffee down the hatch by 4:45.
Wow.
And I need to make sure I have a full evacuated cloaca before I get on that bike, because I don't want to be on that bike like clenched.
Yeah.
I could give it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I wouldn't want, there's other things I'd give up first. But if I had to, I'm sure I could.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Chocolate. Could you give up chocolate?
Yes. Yes. I do love chocolate and I eat far too much. But I can go 4 or 5 days without realizing that I haven't had chocolate. It's got no physical effect on me if I don't.
Oh, so you judge these things that as a physical effect?
Oh, yeah. I think so. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'd miss it. I do love chocolate. But yeah, like I said, I can go 4 or 5 days and think, oh, I fancy some chocolate today. I haven't had some in a while. So if that was 10 days, if that was 20 days, or when it went on and on, I'm sure I'd be fine.
I could give it up right now. I'm never having it the rest of my life. I'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'd be all right. Yeah.
The coffee thing, back to the caffeine thing, when I was redoing our kitchen, I was at a job that was like stressful. And I, for some reason, this is, you know, over 10, 15, you know, 12, 15 years ago, I started drinking Monster energy drinks.
Oof.
And I referred to them as the time machine, because once you drink one, it's like time changes. Like, it's weird. It's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, the day's over. This is awesome. So I wouldn't even call it Monster anymore. I call it the time machine. And then when I was redoing the kitchen, my wife was like, wanted it done. And she knew that she would, when she got the groceries, there would be a case of our four pack of Monster. And then if I was, there would be certain moments where there would just be this hand coming through this like tarp with a Monster. And she'd give me the Monster and I got
just like the whip, just to keep you going.
No, just like, yeah, it was like, fill the car, you know, got to change the tires and fill the car. There was a moment where I was easily consuming 4 Monster energy drinks a day to get like the kitchen done. And I was a fucking mental patient, but I knew time machine times 4. And I knew it was bad for me, but it was just like, once we finished the kitchen, I'm just like, I'm done with this fucking Monster. I just don't need to be this efficient and jacked up. It's just it's unreasonable. It's too much sugar, too much caffeine. The headaches I got from not having caffeine were the worst I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
Withdrawal from caffeine.
Yeah.
And
I don't think people realize. I mean, I said 1 cup of coffee a day. If I have maybe 3 in a day, I'll have a terrible headache. But if I don't have any, I'll have a terrible headache. And that'll last 4 or 5 days up to a week before they'd sort of subside, you know, if I wanted to wean off completely. That keeps me balanced.
And just to let you know, my wife and I drink dark roast coffee, thinking that that's just higher octane. Well, that's not the case. Henry Hyde sent me some high octane light roast Baltimore coffee that was delicious. Sent me delicious coffee from Baltimore. I swear to God, I thought my fucking face was going to fly at him. I thought my eyeballs were going to blow out. There was the caffeine levels. I drank a pot of it. I thought I was going to collapse.
Yeah.
I was crazed, totally crazy.
Here in France, the way they have their coffee is, you could stand a spoon in it, you know? It's strong as hell. Yeah.
Okay. Next thing that you can give up. You're prepared. You have the 2 for easy eggs, no problem. We don't need eggs anymore. Alcohol. What if you couldn't drink alcohol? Could you give it up for good?
Yeah, I think I do think I could. I'm drinking less and less and less every year, simply because it's down to the effects on me. I 2-3 beers and I feel it the next day,
right?
Like badly. So when I do have, but I mean, wine's different actually. I can drink a lot more wine than beer, I suppose. But, I think I could. When I was younger, it would be more of a social thing.
Right.
And you know, you'd be out with your friends, you'd all be having beers and all the rest of it. That happens far less now. So most of the alcohol that I drink would be sort of just wine in the house. It's like coffee. I enjoy it. I wouldn't want to give it up, but I think I could.
What if there was like some sort of tariff, and all of a sudden they sent to the, all right, guys, no more beer. No more beer in France.
Yeah.
You'd be okay? Would you be able to, would you, you'd be, you'd go crazy, but.
Here's the thing. I think I could give up. Okay, then. When you say alcohol or beer, you know, if it's just beer, I think I could give that up easily. Easily, like today. If somebody's saying, yeah, I'd be like, okay, a little bit gutted, but yeah, that's fine. But as I've got older, I think wine I'd struggle with. Just, you know, takes the edge off, you know, have nice, some nice food and, you know.
I'm starting to finally get out of Christmas guts. My Christmas gut, my, you know what I'm saying? Like holiday Christmas guts, like I'm starting our, to like.
Our house is still full of Christmas indulgence because we went away like the day after Christmas. We went skiing and we sort of forgot that before Christmas because we was just like, we just need to get to that line of Christmas. We, all the stuff we bought in. And the cupboards are still full of shit. And funny enough, again, I was talking to this, my wife earlier, it's like, would it be worse for you if you just like had it all in one day? Shit it all out, it's out of your system. Or do you think the slow graze over a month is probably worse for you, I'm thinking. So I've got a birthday coming up very soon. So I think on my birthday, I think I'll have a massive blowout and from the next day, clean living. That's my plan.
I'm going to tell you a couple of things. Number one is back to coffee. If I had to ask this question to my wife, you couldn't have coffee, she would say that's impossible. Like she's just like, there's just no way. There's no way. Completely no way. Booze, no problem. I feel a million times better when I'm not
boobs.
Drink. Booze. Boobs.
Oh,
I can't
right.
give up.
Okay.
I cannot give boobs. I can't give up. I mean, I'm here with you right now.
I'm a sucker for those
time.
Boobs.
I'm here with you. You and Morocco are the two biggest boobs I know. I'm with you. But the worst part about the Christmas grays is you usually towards the end. It's all the dregs. It's all the, like, we have.
The enjoyment's gone.
My wife gets sent all these things from, like, for medical stuff. We get, like, candy boxes and, like, chocolate boxes. And she gets, like, she'll take a bag, a Ziploc bag, and she'll shove it all in there. And then at the end of dinner, she just brings the Ziploc bag to the table, and we just kind of stick our hands in there. And we are now on fumes. It's like the candy that's, like, chocolate covered cherries and the bullshit like that.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah,
chocolate
yeah.
with orange cream dipped chocolate bullshit. And you're eating it and you're just like, this doesn't even taste good. This is I don't even want to eat this shit.
Calories because you're not really getting enjoyment from it. And I think if you're getting lots of enjoyment from eating something that's bad for you, I'm all right with that. But it's when, yeah, like you said, when you're eating something that's bad for you and you're not particularly enjoying it, it's just, yeah,
okay.
Bad calories.
Let's say mad cow disease strikes back, no beef. And I want a ranking order of all the things I want a ranking order of which is the hardest of them all.
Yeah.
No beef. You can have chicken, you can have fish, no beef.
Yeah, I would struggle. Because again, this is something I've given some thought to over the past few years because, you know, red meat, you know, it's not particularly good for you. And I'm thinking, I don't think I could become a vegetarian because I don't like a lot of vegetables.
Right.
No, I love
Clearly.
Chicken. Yeah, I could. I love chicken. I'm thinking, yeah, I could just do chicken. But then it's that bolognese. That's got me.
That's one thing I tell you, you know what the worst part about not eating meat is when you label yourself. My kid doesn't eat a lot of meat. Oh, but she wants a hamburger every so. And I don't consider myself vegetarian or vegan. I mean, you're using expressions like plant-based because you're just like, every so often my kid says to me, he's like, you don't you want a hamburger? I'm like, yeah, I want a fucking hamburger. Or you want a steak? Let's get a steak. We don't normally eat it very often. I told my kid, I said, don't call yourself a vegetarian or vegan because your friends are going to make fun of you. And you're not pigeonholed in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't had beef. The only times I ever have beef now are if we're at a restaurant and I'm just like, yo, I'm not bringing it home because no one else is going to eat it. And I want a fucking steak. Before I went to a Knicks game, we went to a steakhouse. I had a fucking steak. It was delicious.
Yeah.
But that's like if thing, I had it? To, it's that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Nice glass of red wine, some beef. It's got this certain warmth and like, oh.
Gluttony.
Yeah. It's oomph to mumph, I call it. It's just like the
oomph to mumph.
Oomph to mumph. It's like a real sort of.
I fucking love oomph to mumph.
I can feel it, you know? It warms you up, and it's you know, particularly with the red wine too. It's all just richness of it all.
Is oomph to mumph kind of like nut to butt?
I don't know what nut to butt is.
When you see two people on a motorcycle, and one guy's on the back, oomph to butt to nut. Or if you're in the line that's too long, you say, "God damn, this line's so long, I'm nut to butt with this guy over here." That's no. Not oomph to mumph. I love oomph to mumph.
It's a completely made-up phrase that my wife and I, we've said for years. But it's that when you've got something that's really rich and indulgent, it's like, "Oh, oomph to mumph," you know?
I'll never remember it, but I wish I
would. It sounds French, but it's not.
Oomph to mumph is fucking
oomph
awesome.
Oomph to mumph, yeah.
All right. So, of all the things I mentioned, struggle. What would be the one thing you'd have the hardest time with?
Oh, I do think beef. Sadly.
Wow. Sadly. More than coffee. More than booze.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
More than chocolate.
Chocolate. I could easily do. I think. I don't think that would be such a thing.
Damn. Wow. Alcohol, I'm surprised.
I'd struggle because I'd you know there's a lot of enjoyment.
Nice
to have a drink. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't get drunk these days. No. We'd have a couple, but
oomph to mumph.
Yeah, I think beef and the old oomph to mumph.
Wow,
yeah.
Beef is the hardest one for you to give up.
I think so. Yeah.
Wow. Do you have good beef where you live?
Well, we live in the Limousin, and so the Limousin cow is
oomph
to mumph. Exactly.
Wait a second. I got to go back. Oh, well, we live in the Limousin. What the fuck is that?
The Limousin, so they're famous in France. It's like the beef producing region. So they got these famous sort of golden cows, and they're everywhere. If I even looked out the window, there's golden cows everywhere. It's quite
what
famous.
What makes them golden? Just their color?
Yeah, the color. Yeah.
Can you imagine the hey, Diego Lepen, can you imagine the fucking coin slot you could make with the fucking golden cloaca? Golden cow coin slot. You imagine that one? Oh my god. High ticket value. But you know what's crazy about French cooking, the French beef, is they're obsessed with the rump steak. They call it the rump steak all the time.
And when we buy steak over here, they're always ready to cut the fat off. And I'm always like, whoa, 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 leave that fat on. And they look at me as if like, what the hell? I'm like, yeah, definitely. Like over Christmas, we bought a few like sort of big sort of ribs, you know, sort of four ribs. I don't mean four ribs, I mean like four ribs.
Yeah.
We bought a few of them because we had guests and all the rest of it. And they're always trimming everything off. And I'm just like, whoa, keep it easy.
Allons, arrêtez, allons-y, ça suffit, huh? Come on,
is that
man.
French?
Yeah, oomph to mumph, motherfucker.
That's it.
Oomph to mumph, what are you doing? Don't touch my fat, you fucker, you. Oh, Craig wants the fat. Oomph to mumph.
It's all the fat.
God damn.
I think that's a good way to end the show.
Oomph to mumph.
Oomph to mumph, everybody. We shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed, when I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.